Hello, and welcome to Crackpot Theories, where everything is plausible until proven otherwise.
I'm Sirka.
And I am Sinead.
Woo!
Why the woo?
Because I'm excited.
Because we're still doing a toddler TV special?
Yeah, toddler TV electric boogaloo!
God, what was that? I think it's past your bedtime, really.
It is.
Well, I should actually point out the reason why I watched so many children's TV shows. As I've said before, I'm kind of a lot of people's go-to babysitter and have been for years. Because I'm one of those people that children think are really, really cool. And then as they get older, they start to realize I am not cool in any way, shape or form.
I think you're cool.
You once told me that I was the coolest uncool person you know.
Yeah. But that still means you're cool.
Okay, I suppose. But one of my sort of philosophies has always been that if a child is watching a show that they're really interested in, then I owe it to that child to watch the show with them, whether I like it or not, because then I can talk to them about it and we can build a narrative together, helps them put pieces together. I'll ask them questions about the show and I'll make comments about it, and be used for teaching moments as well when they're growing up. Just little things like that. Children identify with different TV characters in a lot of ways. So it's not necessarily just mindless entertainment. Even if the show itself is really, really bad, it's still a way to connect with the child that you're building a relationship with. So I've always sat down and watched an awful lot of really, really awful children's TV shows in order to have that little bonding time with them. When I get bored, then I start developing all the weird theories. And that doesn't usually take me long. But I keep it to myself. I don't go around telling children these things. I promise.
You wait until they're old enough.
Yeah, I wait until they're like, until they're 15 years old. And then I corner them at like a family party or something and said, do you know what was secretly going on behind the scenes? Do you remember?
The Santa Claus is a symbiote.
Do you remember when I used to be cool? Okay, so the first theory that I'm going to talk about is in regards to a show called In the Night Garden that was very popular nearly a decade ago. A lot of people seem to have forgotten it exists now, but at the time it was everywhere because it was a sort of a follow-on from the Teletubbies. Do you remember anything about this?
I do, because my little cousin was really, really into it when he was very, very little. And anytime they were over from England, I used to see it occasionally. And it was freaky. It was like somebody had taken a load of LSD, but not the good LSD, like when you're watching Teletubbies, you can be like, oh, this is crazy. There was something just oddly off about In the Night Garden.
Yes.
Like one of them looked like those aliens that were from Argos, the Argos ad campaign for a while. Like the blue flocked creepiness.
Yes, and the staring expressions, the rictus grins, it was a very strange phenomenon, and a lot of the kids that I was babysitting at the time really, really loved it, so I had to watch it. what a beautiful time of my life.
Reluctantly.
But you see, what I sort of realized after I had been watching it for a while is that this is actually a glimpse into the main character's personal hell.
Like purgatory, but for
I used to think that it was like purgatory, but then I realized, no, this is full-blown hell. There is nothing good about the Night Garden. It is awful.
It is the bad place.
It is. It is the very bad place. Now, I think the initial The initial idea behind it was the
concept.
Concept. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. This is why you're here, to remind me of words I can't think of on my own.
Aww.
and for other reasons.
Not the decade long friendship. No. It's to correct you on the correct pronunciation of concept.
Exactly. I've been using you all this time.
I knew it.
For podcast clout. Okay, but the concept was that this was a sort of a going through the routine of very small children before they go to bed. So you've got Eagle Piggle, the main character, who was a foot. He is a sentient foot with
a sentient foot.
His head is a foot that has its own body. And his name is Eagle Piggle, so that's obviously Wiggle Toes.
Is it actually supposed to be a foot?
I think so.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I think he is supposed to be a foot, and he has a blanket because a lot of kids are, at certain ages, they like to go around with blankets. You know, the way they'll have their special blanket that they go around with.
Some adults do too.
This is true, but that's because we get to a certain age and we're like, we're all so cold, we need comfort. So I keep knitting those giant blankets and giving them away. Just to provide a little bit of joy for everybody, a little bit of joy and a little bit of comfort. There's certain things you never grow out of.
This is true.
So yeah, Iggle Piggle is a foot. That's supposed to be about like tickling feet. I think it's supposed to possibly represent after bath time and that the blanket is a towel. I don't know.
Hmm.
Then there's Upsy Daisy with her bed. The Tombly Boos, they fall down a lot. That's their thing. I think it's something supposed to do with like putting on your pajama pants and falling over kind of thing, which is a lot of toddlers do when they're learning to put their pajamas on by themselves. They fall over a bit.
Or learning to walk even if you were very small.
That is true. Yeah. Even trying to teach kids that if they fall over, not to cry about it because it's just funny. Falling down is funny. And then Macapaca is this tiny little rock monster whose job is to clean people's faces because you clean your face before bed. Then at the end of the episode, they do a little storybook retelling of what they're just after doing.
Huh.
Yeah. It's like they tell the story twice. Like first time they do it and then the second time they just tell the story. And then that's their story before bed. And then the episode ends.
Could you imagine being a little kid and your story before bed was just a retelling of what you did that day? And then you got up and you had a slice of toast. Oh,
I wonder what you're going to do next. Then, oh, yeah, I remember.
And then you brushed your single tooth. How exciting.
But that was basically the plot of Goodnight Moon in a way, because it was just like, good night, this thing in my room. Good night, this thing in my room. Good night, moon. Good night, everybody.
But that was cute.
Yeah.
It's like when Bear in the Big Blue House used to say goodbye to the moon. They had a song about it.
Yeah, but that was interesting. They had something different that they did, and they didn't tell the same story twice. But I think that was just part of their thing. Gosh, the bunker is noisy tonight. Something going on.
The government have found us.
Told you should have tinfoiled up those cracks.
It's the Twitter, I'm telling you. They found us through Twitter.
I'm so sorry. I just wanted to interact with people and be cool.
I've no idea if you guys can hear that, but yeah, our bunker is being invaded.
Our bunker has been contaminated by normies.
Oh no. But I digress. We're talking about sentient feet.
Yes. Sentient feet and their friends. Okay, so Iggle Piggle, when he goes to the night garden, there's all his friends. Mm-hmm. Now, this has been narrated by Shakespearean actor Derek Jacobi. Have you ever seen Derek Jacobi in anything?
I know of them, yes.
Yeah. I will always remember him for being Claudius in I, Claudius, and giving such dignity and gravitas to that role. Mm. And now he's forced to say things, oh, look, here comes the ninky-nunks and the titty furs are going to sing.
I think he was in a BBC version of, I think it was Hamlet or something.
Yeah, most likely. He does all that kind of thing. You know, he's a very, rich performer. You know, he's the kind that you don't mind paying a huge amount of money to see on the stage because you know it's going to be amazing. Mm. He narrates this as if he's being held at gunpoint. They have some dirt on him and they are making him do this because with every word, he sounds like he wants to die.
Say the line. Iggle Piggle!
Oh, look, Iggle Piggle's out of bed. Oh, no. That's naughty, Iggle Piggle. Can I go now, please? I miss my wife. Okay. All right, so Iggle Piggle gets there and he's introduced to his friends. Now, the first of these, probably the most famous of these friends because of the amount of dolls that were sold of her is Upsy Daisy.
Yeah.
Who is, I think, supposed to look like a flower because she's got like little petals that look like dreadlocks coming out of her head.
Aren't they kind of stripy like socks?
Yes, they are. Yeah. So she's like, she's supposed to kind of resemble a daisy. And her thing is that she loves her bed. Mm. But the problem is the bed likes to run away from her. And then she has to do this whole chasing thing where she goes, oopsie daisy, chases it all around the hills and over and through the forests and everything. Now, as somebody who enjoys my bed very much and all the fun things that I get to do there, if I was really tired at the end of the day, and in order to get into my bed, I had to chase it over a couple of miles, I would want to die.
I'd sleep on the couch.
Can you imagine being at your most tired and not being able to lie down because you have to catch your bed?
I'd just be like, you know what? This ain't worth it. The floor ain't going nowhere.
No, there's something stopping her from sleeping on the floor. Something has to be stopping her from sleeping on the floor. Because she's got that rictus grin going while she's chasing the bed, but she never stops chasing the bed. She needs the bed. She has this overwhelming need for that particular bed because that is her bed. And she is not allowed to sleep anywhere else. But she has to catch it first. What did she do to deserve that? It must have been horrible.
It does. The more you talk about it, the more it does sound like when they talk about the underworld and like you have to, oh, I cannot think of it, where you have to do your service and stuff and
you have to suffer for a while before they let you ascend.
Yeah, you have to make up for your earthly sins.
Yes.
You have to do the trials and stuff. Like one of the Greek gods had to keep pushing a boulder up a hill and then it rolled down again.
It is
over and over again.
It is funny that you talk about rocks because we have a more direct comparison with Macapaca. Macapaca is a rock monster who lives in a hole in the ground. Like, it's not even a cave. It is a pit.
The way you said that, and he's a rock monster that lives in a hole in the ground. I was half expecting you to carry on with the line from The Hobbit. It's like, and in the hole, there lived a rock monster.
No, that would be cute. There is very little cute about Macapaca beyond his first impression, because some people do think he's cute, and he is cute in the way that he goes around washing people's faces. But the thing is, the washing of his friends' faces, the little favour that he's doing for them, comes at the end of a very long day of washing rocks in his pit all day, every day, scrubbing rocks with a sponge until his task is interrupted because his friends have arrived and he gets to wash their faces for a change of pace.
I just
his job is never finished.
I just can't stop thinking. Oh, you're just going up to someone and you wash their face with rocks.
No, he has a sponge. Oh, but he spent the entire day washing the rocks with the sponge.
I was expecting you to just grab a boulder and just smash it on someone's face. The pain will cleanse you.
No.
Oh, God.
No, Macapaca has a special cleansing sponge that he uses to wash his friends' faces, but he also uses them to wash rocks all day, every day.
That makes so much more sense than what was going through my head. I've thought he was like cleaning the face with a rock, like those weird
pumice stones.
Pumice stones.
He was exfoliating. He was exfoliating his friend's face.
That's what was going through my head. But you just said he was a rock that cleans faces. You never specified there was a sponge until it was too late.
Oh, God. Now you have that picture in my head of him going over Upsy Daisy like a cheese grater.
It would make more sense for him to go after Eagle Piggle considering it's a sentient foot.
Yes! Yes! Oh, my God! Makapak is a pumice stone.
Confirmed. Done.
That was a quick theory. No, okay. This is Makapaka's punishment. He is every time he finishes washing the rocks and his friends' faces, all the other rocks are dirty again. And he has to start all over again. It is literally like Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the hill, getting there and having it roll back down.
Oh.
And by that extension, in the, I think it was the Odyssey when they went in, or was it the Odyssey or was it the Aeneid? They went into the underworld and they saw people suffering. And one of them was the guy who was in a pond and he was trying to get grapes out of a tree, but every time he reached up to grab them, they pulled just out of reach.
Mm.
That is literally what Upsy Daisy's deal is. She's always reaching for her bed, but it's always just out of reach. So she has to chase it down.
Hunt it down.
Until she dies. Or something else.
That was oddly ominous. She dies. Or something else.
Well, I have to assume there's some sort of a Prometheus deal going on here. And speaking of Prometheus, you know the way the bird ate his liver and then every night it grew back?
Yes.
Okay. So, we also have the Tomblyboos. They are...
It was about eating livers.
No, but close. Right, so the Tomblyboos' whole deal is that they fall down a lot and it's funny. It's funny when they fall down. They laugh about it. They do their little thing and then sometimes they go into their home, their little home, which is in a briar patch.
Pointy.
It is like an Iron Maiden. It is like a wooden Iron Maiden and all of the little pathways are slopes.
Oh.
And these are creatures that spend all of their on-screen time falling down. So I have to assume they have fallen at least face first into some of these spikes at some point. So I am assuming that they regrow their eyes and like the soft spots in their head and like their internal organs. They grow them back overnight only to start the whole process all over again.
Oh my God, they're like the spiders. There's like an Amazonian spider that my husband is obsessed with because every morning their eyes burn out because of the sun and throughout the course of the day they regrow it so they have eyes for nighttime. It's horrifying.
I thought you were about to talk about that animal that like breaks off one of its legs and throws it at its enemy to confuse them.
That too.
Okay, but no, like the Tomblyboos don't have any natural predators as far as we know.
When you mentioned them going into all of the spikes, I had a very primal cringe. Just, it physically sent shivers down my spine because I keep thinking of that horrible visual image of spikes and things like under your toenail and stuff. And I'm like, ah, going in the eye and just, no. Mm-mm.
Well, yeah, you know, there's one of these things that when you're, you know, when you are in charge of a child who's at falling over age, everything looks pointy.
Yeah.
You know, you start seeing all the little pointy pieces of your home, all the fire hazards, all of the really dangerous things in your house.
Corners of tables.
Yeah. Do you know the film Baby's Day Out? Oh, I can't watch that anymore. I used to, I was fine watching it when I was a kid. I can't watch it anymore because it is just too scary.
Too many hazards.
Every time that child crawls out onto the road with the cars, I just shrivel up into a little ball. And on a different note, an unrelated note, I can't watch Cliffhanger anymore. I can't get past the first 5 minutes.
What happens in Cliffhanger?
It's about a guy who climbs mountains and there's some sort of a thing with a height. I don't know. I haven't watched it since I was a kid. Because in the first 5 minutes, somebody is trying to go from the top of one mountain to the top of another mountain to get into a helicopter and they slip and they die.
Oh.
And I can't watch that scene anymore because I have suddenly developed a fear of heights now that I'm older and can realize the danger.
Yeah, heights are kind of terrifying though.
But there's that whole thing is that when I'm watching the Tomblyboos toddle around and fall down, when they go into their house, it's just like this instant instinct to reach through the TV and block all of those spikes with my hands.
Put up like bubble wrap.
Yeah, or just, you know, send them to foster care or something. They can't live there. It's a death trap. What? But then I have to assume that because they're living in the death trap, they are not actual children. and they have sinned horribly in their life in order for this to be their punishment. Okay, so yeah, moving on from the Tomty Boos, there's these birds called the Tittyfurs. Stop. I am not making this up. They are literally called the Tittyfurs. And when Sir Derek Jacobi has to say this, he sounds like he is dying with every syllable.
Could you imagine if they were real birds, though, and David Attenborough had to do a documentary on them?
They are real birds. They're just recolored. They are literally like, one of them is a toucan. One of them is like a bird of paradise. They've just put really weird colors on them. And they're like, ooh, look, it's the Tittyfurs.
There goes a flock of Tittyfurs. So majestic.
Do you realize, like, within 6 episodes of this podcast, you have done a David Attenborough impression twice?
And it will probably rise as these episodes go on, because despite my ongoing grievance with the man, I do actually quite like his voice. He's an asset to the world.
Yeah, this is true. It would be amazing if he was narrating an episode of In the Night Guard.
And doing it like a documentary of animals.
Yes. Here we see the Tomty Boos in their natural habitat, falling face first into brambles. I can't do it. You have to do it. That sounded nothing like Dave Jacobi.
Here in the night garden, we see Upsy Daisy approaching her prey, her bed.
That was beautiful. Okay, but moving on from the Tittyfurs, we also have to talk about the Pontypines and the Wattingerts. Now, I was at
The Wattingerts?
The Wattingerts. I don't know. They're little wooden people who live in a house. They're like a mum and a dad and way too many children.
It sounds like somebody just sneezed. Wattingerts.
Yeah, they look identical, except that one set is blue and the other set is red. I was at a loss to come up with something for these guys. I just couldn't figure out what their deal was. Luckily, the lovely ladies at Mumsnet were there to help me, because I went there and I just said to them, hey guys, have you got any weird theories? Now, I did also promise them that I wasn't going to take any of their theories without express permission. Mm-hmm. But somebody did explain to me in more detail, but I'm just going to give the vague outline, that they're supposed to represent Labour versus Tory.
Well, that is topical, isn't it?
It certainly is. But of course, this is an apolitical podcast. We support no form of government at all, and we stand for absolutely nothing.
I must admit, I do stand for chaos.
You don't in here. You don't stand for anything in here. You check all of that baggage outside the door when you step into the bunker. We are here for theories only.
Chaos
and the giggles.
Is fun.
Yeah, but we like to have an order to our podcast as well.
True, true.
Yes, so it can't just be unbridled chaos. But this is sounding way too close to a form of government for my liking in here, so we are going to stop this right now and continue with our podcast.
Tinfoil hats are slipping.
Yes, they are. So yeah, the other thing that happens is we do get occasional visits from the Ninky Nunk and the Pinky Punk. One of them is a blimp. The other one is a tiny train. They transport the guys somewhere. I don't know what their deal is either, except that they seem to be going nowhere. And also, speaking about that, there are these floating dudes that go nowhere. They're called something like the hoo-has. They're these giant floating shapes. And they move very slowly in the wind, looking like they are constantly advancing on you.
Are they like the Titans or giants from Majora's Mask?
They're more like a bunch of smiling jellyfish.
So like the giants from Majora's Mask, just slowly encroaching.
Slowly approaching us, yes. There is an episode when everything gets sped up.
Oh God.
And the hoo-has start moving slightly more vigorously than usual, but they still don't go any further. They are always just constantly approaching. Kind of a little bit like if the monster from It Follows never caught up with anybody. It's just a constant presence looming in the background.
there's something a bit terrifying about the idea of a sped up children's show, because even at normal speed, most of them are oddly uncanny. But the idea of speeding them up, just there's something wrong about that, that they shouldn't go at that speed.
I mean, you'd have at least twice the amount of Tomblyboo evisceration for your money. You'd have Upsy Daisy running headfirst on into a ravine. Makapaka would be worn down to a chip. Okay, but I haven't gotten to the worst part of all of this, okay? So when the episode ends, Upsy Daisy has finally caught up with her bed and is allowed to get into it. Tomblyboos go into their spiky hellscape of a home. Makapaka does whatever he's doing. I don't know if he's finished washing the rocks. He's never going to be finished washing those rocks, but I think they give him a break for like 2 seconds. Everything stops. And then Derek Jacobi goes, oh, Iggle Piggle's out of bed. Iggle Piggle's still awake. And Iggle Piggle goes running off to where he lives. Because Iggle Piggle is never allowed to remain with his friends in the night garden. He is not allowed to stay there. He gets to visit there for a few minutes. Because where Iggle Piggle is sleeping is in a boat, a small wooden rowing boat with no oars, in the middle of the sea, which is lit by a single light bulb, a single bare light bulb on a stick. There's no sails. There's no oars. It's a rowing boat. He is out there with nothing to cover him except for his blanket. And that is where he goes to sleep when the episode ends.
Living the dream.
I can think of several ways in which Iggle Piggle could die out in the ocean some night. Eaten by sharks. Even though we have expressed the opinion that sharks don't really eat that many people. But I'm sure they would make an exception for a sentient foot. The light bulb could burst and that exposed wire could set his blanket on fire and burn him to death.
But where is the electricity coming from?
I don't know. Probably a generator.
But if he gets all wet, then the electricity is going
to
shock
electrocute him. Yes. It is a death trap, and that is where he lives, except for those 10 minutes of respite where he gets to visit his friends, only to have it snatched away from him again, which is just even crueler when you think about it.
It really is. How does he get back in the morning, though, if he doesn't have any oars? Does he just have to stick his hand in or stick his foot head in and start rowing in the general direction?
No, he just is there or he's not there. He's either in the night garden or he's in his boat asleep.
He washes up on the shore.
No, there is no shore in sight. It's just an endless expanse of ocean. That's it.
That is horrifying.
It's existential, really. Like, the world has been drowned and there is no land left and all that's left is a sentient foot.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That sounds really lonely, though.
Well, yeah, it's his punishment for his sins. I don't know why they decided to make him a foot, but they did.
Maybe he was really prideful in life. Like, he was like, oh, I'm so beautiful. So in the afterworld, they just made him a foot.
Well, that is a thing that makes sense if you have a foot phobia, which you do.
It's not that I have a foot phobia. It's just they're not particularly pleasant to look at.
There are people that would disagree with you quite strongly.
People disagree about everything I say, to be honest with you.
But there, I know specific people who would disagree with you and think that it would be fantastic to be a giant sentient foot.
Does that mean he gets to have giant sentient socks?
No, because he's got nothing on that boat except that bare light bulb and his blanket.
That's really sad.
You looked like you were going to cry.
There was that moment of silence that was like, oh, poor Iggle Piggle.
Will we move on to something a little cheerier?
Always. Always, yes.
Okay, now only vaguely.
There's nothing ever particularly cheery. I think what we've started to understand here is that children's shows are bleak. Bleak.
Most things are bleak if I think about them a little bit too long. I think this goes along with my really bad habit of watching incredibly bleak films for the crack.
You managed to make My Little Pony bleak.
That's true. I managed to make The Santa Claus about demonic possession somehow.
The Exorcist, a Christmas movie.
It is. It makes me, it puts me in the Christmas mood.
Oh, never forget. Okay. But anyway, next theory. What is your cheerier theory?
Okay, well, it's cheerier in that these people actually do get to have some fun every now and then in their isolated fishing community that they live in. We are talking about Fireman Sam. Mm. Now, the last child that I babysitted, he wasn't actually able to say Fireman Sam. He used to call him Sam Man. What he's referring to?
Enter Sandman.
Oh, it was really cute. But we used to have discussions about the firefighter Elvis in the series. And I always used to say when we were watching this, Elvis is not a very good fireman at all. He clearly wants to be a rock star. Why are they making him be a fireman? And this 3-year-old completely agreed with me. He was like, yeah. Elvis needs to follow his dreams. Obviously he didn't say it quite like that, but oh, poor Elvis is mostly what he used to say. But we will talk about Elvis more in more detail in a minute. Okay, so Fireman Sam lives in a place called Pontypandy. He is a firefighter. Whenever there is a fire, and there are many, many fires in Pontypandy. What?
Would it be Welsh if it's Pontypandy? Because that sounds like a Welsh town name.
Well, the Welsh accents would probably give that away.
I mean, I was a Postman Pat girl, okay? I'm just gonna leave now. Goodbye, cruel world. I haven't watched Fireman Sam.
Not even in preparation for this episode.
No! I am a failure. I am a disappointment.
Critical research failure on your part.
I do apologize deeply for my bumbles.
This is why I love having you here, though. You never know what's going to happen.
I do apologize. Okay, carry on, please. Hide my shame.
I tried to, but I can't breathe.
Oh God!
We're going to call an intermission to collect ourselves.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That was a very surrogate thing for me to say. But yes, apparently it's set in Wales, which is good to know. Unlike Postman Pat, which is just general England. I'm very sorry. I think we lost her. I think you lost me a little bit there, but
stop talking so I can stop laughing. Oh my God. My stomach hurts so much. Okay. Okay.
I digress.
All right. So, yes, this does take place in Wales.
In Pontypandy.
Yes.
Is it, what happens in Pontypandy? I'm genuinely sorry. I'll stop now. Please carry on, for the love of God.
I can't see my notes through my tear.
Oh, God.
Okay.
So that was about 5 minutes of us just laughing. I hope you laughed along with us. Because Pontypandy's Wales.
Stop saying it! You're just setting yourself and me off again.
Okay. I am composed. I do apologise. Yes,
okay,
yes.
Okay. So, Fireman Sam takes place in Wales in a place called Pontypandy.
Yes.
There are 16 people that live there.
A whole 16.
A whole 16 people.
A whole 16 in Pontypandy.
Stop.
Okay, right. I'm officially done. That was my last joke. However, okay. I would want that on a t-shirt though.
just wheezing laughter.
No, 16 people in Pontypandy. But anyway, yes, there are 16 people that live in Pontypandy.
Okay. Four of them are firefighters. There is Station Officer Steele, who is the daddy in charge. Elvis.
Right.
Who does not want to be a fireman, clearly. Penny, who is a firewoman, thank you very much. Affirmative action in, you know, all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam, who is the person that they always call when there's an emergency. They never say, we're going to call a fireman, or we're going to call the fire station, or, oh God, help me. It's always, we'd better call fireman Sam. And they do.
Why is there so many fires for 16 people? Is one of them secretly an arsonist?
Well, you see, yes. But that explanation is a little bit too simple. Because, now, this was another thing that was posited on Mumsnet, but this is a theory I'd heard quite a lot of as well, is that the son of the shopkeeper, who owns the one shop in town, they are two of the 16 people that live in Pontypandy. The shopkeeper and her son, who is a fire starter. Twisted fire starter.
Like legit in stories?
Anytime there's a fire or something that's gone wrong, 9 times out of 10 he's involved somehow. He's a little specky ginger.
Just
and he wears camouflage trousers. So he's just trouble from a mile away.
So what you're saying is there a little specky ginger from Pontypandy
that wears camouflage
that likes to start fires.
Completely, yes. Now they did start trying to make a thing in later episodes that Norman wasn't necessarily starting every single one of the fires, because that was a bit unfair on him. He was a kid. You can't just kind of like point at a child and say, this is the son of Chucky, obviously. But here's the thing. He is a ginger, obviously. His mum has black hair. There is only one man, in fact, one person, full stop, who has red hair on Pontypandy, and that is Fireman Sam.
Oh, does he start fires just so he can see his dad?
Yes, that was the theory. But again, that's a bit too simple, because this is not plausible theories. This is crackpot theories. We have to take it that bit further.
Dig deeper.
Exactly. So I think, yes, it started off that way because the other people on the island, there's Sam's brother who's married and has two kids. And so Norman has to see Fireman Sam being a doting uncle to the twins, the annoying twins. And obviously, you know, he wants to get a bit of attention from his dad, so he decides to start a couple of fires. But in the course of starting these fires, I think that he must have somehow invoked a demon.
Okay.
In that, there are certain rituals involving fire in religions like Satanism, in cults, certain cults. You do certain things in sequences and it's supposed to invoke a demon. I think that in the course of trying to get his dad's attention, Norman inadvertently summoned some sort of fire demon to Pontypandy and turned it into Ragnarok.
Like, now that we have established that it is in fact in Wales, in Pontypandy.
Are you sure about that?
We're 100% sure. It would make sense because, like, over in, like, England, they have a lot of druids and stuff and all of that history. It would make sense if they had a pagan god that was just...
Pagan god of fire!
Fire!
I am the god of hellfire and I bring you fire!
Fire!
The hell is that?
Fire!
Okay, but yeah, so later on they also added like this Italian woman, her name is Bella Lasagna, and this one kid in a wheelchair. And I don't know who that child belongs to. They're just there. And the only thing that's actually notable about them is that they can't walk.
I have a tangent theory for you, Sinead.
Okay.
Is it secretly Professor X, like Professor Xavier, and the kid has secret fire powers and he's trying to control it
Oh my God, Professor X is possibly scouting out Norman because Norman's a mutant.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Like, the amount of deliberate fires or fires that are caused by human error that involved Norman did taper off after a while, but the amount of accidents
just skyrocketed,
increased to the point where they had to bring in an Australian man who owns a helicopter to stay on the island with them to help them do all of the many, many rescues that they have to do. Because every day there is something going on in Pontypandy. Every day something randomly catches on fire or somebody gets swept out to sea or the Aussie guy with the helicopter is trying to put some shrimps on a Barbie and then and sets the forest on fire. That is an actual episode.
Oh, for God's sake. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh.
Okay, yeah, but, you know, Norman may have started off as a twisted fire starter. But over time, it just sort of molded itself into Pontypandy being like the 10th circle of hell where everything just goes wrong all the time. Because they cannot do anything at all, without things going wrong, without something setting on fire or without something blowing up or something getting swept out to sea and in danger of drowning or a bunch of sheep falling off a cliff.
Would you like to tell our wonderful listeners what happened in the coffee shop before we came to the, I was about to say studio, but we are secretly in a bunker. But did you want to tell the kind listeners what happened before we came to the bunker?
Well, it seems that you actually had a better grasp of what was going on there, so I think you should tell them.
So, we were there getting our pre-recording
hot drink.
Pre-podcast hot drink. And we were in the coffee shop, just minding our own business, myself and the coffee lady. And Sinead decided to ask the poor lady behind the thing, so, how many people do you get in this coffee shop a day? And the lady decided to play along and be like, oh, maybe about, I don't know, 800 people a day. It's a very busy coffee shop. It's in the middle of Dublin. And Sinead just said to her, completely deadpan and not understanding the irony, how long do you think it would take to evacuate in the case of a fire? And the woman...
I did not say that at all.
You said to them...
I said, if the entire population of Dublin disappeared overnight and left only 16 people, you probably wouldn't be able to stay in a coffee shop like this, would you? Because the point I was trying to connect was with the fact that one of the people in Pontypandy owns a coffee shop, despite the fact that Pontypandy only has a population of 16.
But you asked the lady how quickly she could evacuate.
No, I didn't. You made up that little extension yourself.
You should have seen the face on the poor woman.
I did preface it by saying, can I ask you a very strange question? And to be fair, it was a very strange question.
It was. It was. But I digress. Sinead likes to terrify baristas about asking them about arson.
I like to do my research for these podcasts so that I don't end up coming into this thing without my sources checked.
Without knowing the Pontypandy's in Wales.
I knew it was Wales.
I'm never going to live that down, I swear.
No, you are not.
But I digress.
Okay, well, listen, if we get away from the fact that, you know, Pontypandy is in the 10th circle of hell and that they are trapped there now and everywhere. Like, they did try to evacuate it briefly when everything caught on fire. It was literally, it was a TV movie that was made where all of the little fires just combined into one massive fire and they had to evacuate all 16 people who lived there.
What an upheaval.
Exactly. And eventually they ended up back in Pontypandy. There was no lasting damage. Like, oh, we live to be on fire another day.
It seems like an awful lot of firefighters for a very, very small town.
Exactly.
You'd need one. Maybe two if it's particularly rowdy. Like.
Maybe what I should do is I should go to a fire station and start asking questions there.
Investigate the theory.
Yes, but the other kind of theory that I wanted to put forth in this as well is, it's more mundane, is the firefighter Elvis. He does not appear to want to be a firefighter at all.
He wants to be a rock star.
Yeah, he's not good at being a firefighter. He wants to play his guitar and sing his own music and be a rock star. He's got himbo energy.
Oh, Sinead, that is a very bad thing to take up after me just watching Promare.
No. We'll leave your Promare theories for other days.
No, but it's firefighters and himbo.
Okay, but this specific himbo, I do not know what's keeping him being a firefighter, but there is an episode where he gets a chance to be on TV singing his song and playing his guitar. And Station Officer Steele, who is his boss, but not like his god, tells him, well, fine, you go play your little guitar and sing your little song on the TV, but don't forget you're a firefighter first.
And Elvis, threatening.
Elvis did not turn around and say, actually, I can do what I want. You're not my dad. Or is he? But because there was theories that maybe Station Officer Steele was Elvis's estranged dad and that he was trying to mold Elvis into a firefighter, despite the fact that Elvis does not have any capacity for the job at all, and the fact that there are only 16 people in Pontypandy and they don't need that many firefighters anyway. But it's also possible that Station Officer Steele really fancies Elvis, and that's why he's trying so desperately to keep him in the job.
Sinead, that went from like reckless abandonment for your father to kind of weird there.
Okay, but we already have one case of reckless abandonment by a father figure, which has caused Ragnarok. So I'm assuming there could be something different there, because Station Officer Steele, like, he seems oddly fond of Elvis in a way and just seems very exacerbated by the fact that he can't turn him into a firefighter. He seems to have this idea that Elvis should be a firefighter. And why else? Except that, you know, oh, if he goes and he plays his music and sings his songs, he's going to end up in Hollywood and he'll leave me behind, kind of thing. When, you know, your father, if you were really bad at a job he's trying to groom you for, would probably be delighted if you went off to Hollywood and made something of yourself. Whereas somebody who really, really fancies you would want to keep you around, whether it's for your own good or not. So.
That went from a nice theory of like, oh, he's just his dad looking out for him. And it's like, yeah, we went to shipping territories. And
I don't ship it. This cannot be called a ship. I just think that there's something a bit odd about their dynamic. I do not actually approve of this. I think Elvis should totally ditch being a firefighter and should go live his rock star dreams and should forget about being a firefighter trying to fight back the Ragnarok. Because he is clearly fighting a losing battle there. Let Fireman Sam look after it. He's the guy with his name on the TV show.
He caused it.
It was his fault for being a bad dad.
Annie Hoozles. I think that is all the time we have left for this very odd and very funny episode. I need to find out where Pontypandy is now.
There's no such thing.
There has to be a real Pontypandy. If not, I'm going to make it. I'm going to make a community of Pontypandies where we can all sit with our tinfoil hats and avoid the government in Pontypandy. And it's also really fun to say that. I'm very sorry.
No. Did you ever hear what a microwave is supposedly called in Wales?
Pippity-ping.
A pop-ti-ping.
Pippity-ping.
Which now you sound like the Swedish chef.
But if you listen to the Welsh language, it does kind of sound like they're summoning demons when they're just wishing you like a good day, though. It is a wonderful language that I think should be spoken more. It just sounds like an Eldrican dialect of the gods.
So it's possible that in the course of setting these fires, Norman was just speaking with his normal Welsh accent and accidentally summoned an ancient fire demon to bring forth Ragnarok in Wales.
He was just saying good morning to his mom.
No, he's never that polite. He's a little specky ginger with camouflage trousers.
Oh, God. Anyway.
This has gone too far.
It has.
We have gone too far now. We went mad with power.
This has been Crackpot Theories.
If you think we're wrong about anything, please write in and tell us, because we would like to hear your opinions on all the many, many ways we are wrong.
We are on iTunes. We are on Spotify. We are on Tuned In. We have...
What was that?
I think it's the bunker is about to explode. So we better get out quick.
We better wrap this up.
Check us out on Twitter. We do lots of things. And just remember, folks, the truth is out there and it is significantly weirder than we've ever, ever thought. Poppity Ping and Montepandi.
Good night.
Bye.